Every single week, around every water cooler on this earth, people wonder, what's going to happen next? How's it all going to play out? What can we expect from this week's weekly warning? Well, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. No, ladies, you're just going to get a straight up weekly warning this time. No cliffhangers, no suspense. Just straight out warning, coming at ya right from my mouth into your ears. Are you ready? We record this on Skype, which means that the audio is sometimes shitty, but we try to work around it, and at least it's audible. It's not great, but you can kind of make out what we say. Okay, seriously, it's not that bad most of the time, but some of the time it's shitty. And you're gonna live with it. And you know what? Don't make me say it. Okay, fine. I'll say it. It's because you love us. So sit back. Don't relax, because that's bad for my face. And enjoy the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 14 of Bitter and Fertiles. I'm Mo.
I'm Christy.
And I'm Shelley.
And today we have a guest with us. Say hi, Beth.
Hello.
Beth, why don't you share a brief infertility resume with our listeners?
Okay. So we started trying when we turned 29. Mm-hmm. I'm just coming up to 34 now, so it's a long old story. Mm-hmm. The first year... Normal trying, much fun, before I took myself off to my GP. If you have worked out now, I'm English, so I'll be using English terminology. Who did sort of normal hormone tests and whatever, and then referred us to the NHS, who took some time, did an HSG, an ultrasound, and still went, we don't know, you're unexplained. After the two-year mark of time, I did go slightly insane because the NHS just saying, keep waiting. I couldn't have waited any longer.
Yeah.
So I took myself off to a private hospital, so having to pay rather than to the NHS, for my first round of IVF treatment, partly because it actually helps with doing diagnostic work.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we did that, with all the drugs, I produced just 3 eggs.
Wow.
So we ended up down the ICSI route. So funny enough, that didn't quite work. Then I did wait until the 3-year mark because the NHS or the government paid for a round for me, which was sort of February 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually worked pretty well in that I got a lovely positive result, and then when I did my 6 week scan, there was nothing there.
Okay.
Mm. So that really sucked.
Yeah, I can imagine.
That day when we found out, I accidentally picked up the phone that night from my husband's sister, who was ringing to tell us she was pregnant.
Oh, God.
So that wasn't my best day. I unfortunately managed to stutter out the words congratulations before hanging up.
Oh, gosh.
So that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
So it took a little while to recover from that. And I did my third round about this time last year, mm-hmm. where they put me then on the highest level of drugs that they can use. And I produced one whole egg.
Wow.
Oh.
So obviously, yeah. Ovarian reserve is the issue.
Yeah, basically, that's what our diagnosis now is. Because until this point, they really weren't. They were just saying, you're unexplained. And,
yeah. Hey, Beth, did they sit down and do anything as far as like an FSH or AMH levels? Do they check those at all for you?
Yeah, they have, and they told me they were all fine.
Mm.
After one egg, which make an embryo and was transferred, but it didn't stick.
Okay.
So that was, yeah, about this time last year. So the doctor then sat us down and kind of gave us four options, which was continue with our own eggs and our own sperm, but you're probably less than 5% likely. So, okay, we could be that 5%, but in all likelihood, probably not. Then he was on egg donation, adoption, or walk away. That's basically the four options he gave us. We basically went away and did a lot of thinking, and we're going to our egg donation in January.
Okay,
Oh,
so egg donation in January. Wow, that's exciting. I mean, I'm sure I want we'll talk more about the decision-making process later if you don't mind, because that's
yeah, no worries.
because it's something we haven't talked about on here, and I think it's a good talk to have. But first, Shelley.
How are you?
I'm okay. Hey, in there. So we went, trying to remember. So I guess last time we spoke, we were waiting to go in for our follow-up ultrasound,
Right.
ultrasound. So we went in for that last week, and we were really hoping that it was just gastroschisis and not something even more serious. And at this point, the doctor that we met with, the high-risk OB, thinks that it is definitely gastroschisis, which was actually good news to hear in a lot of ways. We were hoping it wasn't something else that might be trickier to fix or come with, even more problems. So that was good. And we really, really liked this doctor. We really just connected with him. It was a nice feeling. He's going to be our high-risk OB through this pregnancy. We're probably going to go in every 2 weeks or so for checkups and ultrasounds, and he's going to be monitoring us very closely because there still is a lot of there are a lot of factors that come into play. How big the hole is, how much of the bowel is out, and how the baby's growing. It's kind of there's just that has to be watched carefully. So that's what he's going to be doing. But the good news is that we like him, and he connected us with the OB who's going to be delivering us. And she works in the same building, and she actually came downstairs and met us. And she was super nice. And so we're going to start seeing her as well, probably as often as we're seeing him. So we have two OBs now, and we know now where we'll be delivering in Boston, and he also got the ball rolling on connecting with Children's Hospital for the surgery. So we know now that we'll deliver at one hospital, and then the baby will be transferred across the street to Children's Hospital, and the surgery will happen from there. So a lot of questions were answered. We started building our team, and all that felt really good. We were glad it was, at this point. Yeah, I don't want to like. It's still very early, and I don't want to just assume that we're in the clear. Not that having gastroschisis is in the clear by any means, but I don't want to just assume that. But at this point, we're glad to know that it's looking like just gastroschisis. So that's kind of where we are. I mean, still worried, still waiting, but we feel a little better. And yeah,
Can I
you know,
just
that's
say?
just going on.
Can I just say, so listening to you talk specifically about these doctors sound wonderful compared to what you were dealing with before. So I mean, of the silver lining out of all this, I mean, this is still awful. I don't wish a birth defect on anybody. But in the end, it seems like you've ended up with a team of physicians that are going to be far better for you than even if everything was okay.
We left that OB's office on Monday. We felt very happy and at peace. Even though we're still dealing with this diagnosis, we kind of felt like we had found our people.
Which so is that's... so important. I mean, we talked about this last week, about how important it is to find the right doctors. And it really sounds like you found the right doctors. And that's a huge step.
Yeah. Feels like in some ways we've landed where we're supposed to be. Yeah. And, you know, just taking it one appointment at a time, one week at a time. But it feels good. We've kind of come full circle to the point where, you know, we're feeling excited again, and that feels nice. And we're continuing to tell people. Some people we tell about what's going on with the gastroparesis. Some people we don't.
I have a feeling that as time goes by, it's going to get better and better.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Yep, and I have a feeling the fact that you're with a team that's working with you, and it's clear they're going to work with you, that, you know, it's still scary. But I think at the end of the day, it's just going to be such a good experience, which trumps water births and, you know, natural, you know, birthing centers or other things along those lines. It's just going to be really good. So,
yeah, I agree completely. So, so Christy.
Now I want your update.
Oh, I'm first. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I will say this. There has been a huge weight lifted off of the Schmerson household this week. I went in for the HSG. I was really nervous. Stole some extra strength painkillers for my brother, expecting things to just be terrible and a nightmare. And I was like non-functioning. And we go in. First of all, the procedure was not even close to being as painful as it was last time. It was exactly what they say it's supposed to be, like period cramps. It was exactly that, which was already like a huge shock. And then before I even get off the table, the doctor's like, so whoever did your tube reconstruction did a fantastic job. Everything's clear.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. So wait a minute. Were you on the painkillers or not?
I was, but I think that either way, I don't know if the painkillers, I doubt it's the painkillers that did that. I think it just was less painful because nothing was blocked. Yeah. So it was really not that bad. Like I came out of it just a tiny bit woozy. Mm-hmm. But nothing, you know, nothing too bad. And I just cried tears of joy. I kid you not. I was so happy to hear that everything's clear.
Well, you were completely convinced it was blocked. You were completely convinced, and you were talking about IVF, and you were talking about, you know, going to adoption and everything. I mean, you were ready to give up. This changes everything.
It really does. Mm-hmm. I was so convinced. And my husband's like, I told you so. I told you so. Because he's been like an endless optimist. I'm like, well, I told him, you have to admit you were nervous too. And he's like, yeah, I was nervous because you made me nervous. But the thing is, I think it really does come back to the trauma I had, because after Nadav, I'd had a DNC. And the DNC I'd had before that is what caused all the problems. So it made sense that I was really traumatized, and I was afraid that, you know, all those problems would come up again. And all I can say is, you know what, I may have been a drama queen in doing this. But I am so absolutely glad that I did, because it's just, I mean, the mood around here has shifted significantly.
Good.
As a result of this. It's the first bit of good news we've gotten in close to a year.
Mm.
I mean, you know, it really is. We haven't had good news in such a long time. And all of a sudden to get good news is just liberating. I feel like we're hopeful again. I feel like, you know, with we don't get Clomid this month, but we'll get Clomid next month, and things will move along, and I feel like it's just now a matter of a little patience, and we'll be fine. And that's the first time I've felt this optimistic basically since we lost Nadav. It's been such a great shift. And I'm so glad that I insisted on the procedure. I could feel guilty for being all dramatic about this, but I'm not.
Nope.
It was a legitimate fear.
No, it was.
Yeah.
No, you're not allowed to feel guilty. You did what you needed to do.
Yeah.
And the outcome has been this. So.
Yeah.
It was worth it.
Yeah, it was definitely worth it. It was definitely worth it. And I don't feel guilty in the slightest for getting freaked out because, you know, I was having pain in my side again and I, you know, a bunch of other different crap and I was really scared. And now knowing that everything's clear, not only does it make things a hell of a lot easier in terms of finding the patients to go through these medicated cycles, it also makes me a little less paranoid about ectopics, which is something that I was really scared about. Knowing that it's open makes me less scared. I mean, obviously we're still at risk because everybody's always at risk for ectopics, but it's not, if something was partially blocked in there, then, you know, there would have been a serious risk. And that now I know I'm all clear on that end, so I have less to worry about there. And just everything looks a lot rosier in the Schmerson household.
I feel like we both had similar experiences this week in some ways.
Yeah, yeah. I would say so. I mean, big stake scans and that came out positive. And it's amazing what that'll do to your mood, right?
Yeah, it's true.
So when do you go in and see the RE again?
So I'm going in on Thursday. And unless there's a magic pill that'll make you ovulate immediately, it's just going to be monitored, like a monitored cycle this month with no medication, which means it'll take a while until I pop. But, you know, at least I get to pee on stuff, which always makes me happy. Because I've got a huge collection of digital pee sticks that I can use, which makes me incredible.
You need to tell them about the video you sent me, and we need to post this one too.
Oh yeah, it's really funny. There's a video. We'll post this on the blog. There's a video of a really stupid woman literally peeing on all the things. We won't spoil
it.
It's a commercial for a certain product.
Yeah. But it's
worthwhile. Is it from the U.S.?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. I want to see this.
It's hilarious.
It's the epitome of dumb blonde jokes. Yes. So if anybody's blonde, we're not picking on you, promise. But it goes with the territory.
But it's hilarious because she's literally peeing on all the things. Which is, you know...
She's like our mascot.
She is our mascot.
Pretty much.
She's peeing on all the things, which makes me happy. No, it's like, it's really... I'm really, really happy that I get to break in my digital pee sticks properly this cycle.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that, because you just got those, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and they're fantastic. I pee on them for fun now. Like, it's really great, because you get like a digital reader and you get these cartridges and there are so many of them that you don't feel like, you know, you need to hoard them. You can just pee freely. And so you put it in and then the little clock comes up and it flashes. And then when it's done, it gives you either yes or no, like whether you're ovulating or not. And then to make it even more fun, you can pop it out and you can actually see a line. So,
oh dear God!
So you get the best of both worlds. You get lines, and a digital, you know, pee stick god telling you whether you ovulated or not.
Oh no, this thing is dangerous for you.
It is, and I love it. I love it so much. Thank you, Yellow Blanket. It's really, it's fun. It is so fun, and I've got three packages of them, so I'm going to be peeing like a mad woman.
Yeah, you will be. Oh, my God.
It's going to be a hoot. we're optimistic. As you can tell from my mood, I think it's fairly clear that I'm in a much better mood. We're getting optimistic. Let's hope that it's all good news from here, because we've had enough bad news, I think, for a lifetime plus at this point.
Yeah, I
So
agree.
yeah, it's amazing what a bit of good news will do to your mood. So there's that. So Christy, how's Lulu treating you?
Oh, Lulu and I have been wrestling all week. Okay, so a little bit of background. I call Lupron Lulu because she's my monster. Whenever I go on this drug always kicks my butt. It's just amazing how bad it can be. It's not to say that birth control pills don't do it, but it's like the combo of the two, and I lose almost every single time. So it's funny because I wrote about it and somebody commented and said, "Oh, that's a really interesting name that you give for Aunt Flo." And I'm like, no. Whole different beast. So my news for this week's gonna be a bit busy. So I stopped birth control pills. Today's my last one. So I'm
Goodness.
officially off birth control pills. I hope for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I really
Well, we
do.
hope.
I never want to do these again. I've got Lupron at the full dose for at least another week. So Monday is the day that we move embryos. So Monday's crazy for me because I have a final exam that I'm administering at 8 a.m. my time, and then I have to drive back up from where I work, which is like an hour away, back up to the city, and then we are moving our embryos. And it's going to be, and we have to do it all before 2 p.m., which is just going to be nuts. And then we meet with the RE.
Christy,
Yeah.
you're doing the self move, right?
We're doing the self move. Yeah. So we can talk about it, but there's different ways of being able to do it. You can pay for people to do it. It's expensive to pay for people to do it. So the way a
Oh,
lot of
yeah.
clinics, especially if you're local, will allow you to do is they actually give you what's called a dewar, which is basically a smaller container similar to what they store your embryos in, and they fill it up with liquid nitrogen, and basically you become the courier and you go in between the two. So Gray and I have dealt with dewars for years because of what we do. Like, I've worked
Yeah.
with cell lines, and I even worked in a lab that worked on mouse embryos, and so I've seen those. I'm used to freezing my fingers. So that's not so much what we're worried about. What we're worried about more along the way is something bad going on, like getting into a car accident. So to kind of take the edge off of things, I know we need to be silly. So I'm going to be spending this weekend actually downloading children's songs from like the Disney Channel or something like that, just to do something along those ends. And basically, I fully intend on sitting in the back and singing to the doer, and it'll be. I'm a little worried. I don't know how it's going to go down. Like, it's an emotional process, like thinking about
Yeah.
consents and signing all that. So that'll be what it's going to be. And then on Friday, next Friday, that is when we do our baseline. So that is
So
when. So there's a lot kind of coming down the pipe of, is everything okay? What's going to
yeah.
happen? And the reality of it is starting to set in. So.
And it's scary, I know. And just one quick note, there's a really great Hebrew children's album I can send to you, and then you can improve the embryo's language skills.
Oh yeah, that would be lovely.
Yeah, you should totally do that, because then you'll be like education and song.
So it's funny you bring this up because I work with so many people who are Jewish. It's natural. In science, there are Jews everywhere. And I
Yes,
actually
us Hebes love the
They
science.
do. They really do. Anyways, I have three students that have been working with me right now, and they're all Jewish. And they have decided that I'm secretly Jewish because I know all sorts of things. So Gray and I wanted to know, is it possible to be Jewish by proxy?
Yes.
Okay. I think that's what they've decided that we are. It's
Yeah,
rather funny.
it's definitely possible to be Jewish by proxy. I know many people who are Jewish by proxy. It's not a bad thing at all. Join us. There are so few of us in this world. We need more.
So you're more than invited to become more than Jewish by proxy. But of course, this is coming from a Jewish atheist, so I don't know how much this counts. But you know, it's a thing. But no matter what, I strongly suggest that you develop your embryo's Hebrew language skills, because like I've been telling you, even in my darkest, you know, because we've been hoping for each other. So my plan is to meet up in New York in a couple years, and our kids are going to be playing. And so your kids are going to need to learn Hebrew, because, you know, that way they can communicate with my kids. So this is a good way to start.
It's true. That is true. So we'll just have to go that route. No, that's fabulous. That would be wonderful. So, yeah, so this is kind of what is coming down the pipe. So we are, I mean, the mood around here has been solemn. It's. I mean, I'm glad to hear that you, Mo, and Shelley, things are moving along. I think the weight of this is starting to hit both Gray and I in a big way. And what's interesting is to see how scared he is. He's really, really spooked. So it's also hard because he's being hit on all levels right now with work and with family and other things along those lines, and none of them care. And we've spent the past 3 years with it being really the focus being on me. So to actually take a step back and to see how it's affecting the male end of this has been educational and scary and angering in its own way. Because it's amazing. And I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit later today as we talk about donor egg and what people assume. Like, people know what we're going through. They do. But they don't understand. And I think that's to actually see Gray going through it right now and to just have them sit down. Oh yeah, you're going through IVF. Oh, but you know, I'm panicked about, you know, whatever trivial thing there is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, and I kind of said this to you, I think yesterday, Christy, I think that maybe for you stepping outside yourself and worrying about Gray's reaction might be the best way to deal with this, not only for your own mental health, but also for your marriage. I think that I know that you're scared and you've got a lot, you know, going on, but maybe I know for me that stepping outside and looking after other people kind of mellows me out and evens me out. And I think that it might, you know, it might be good if you try to do that. I mean, I'm not saying that you're not doing that already, but maybe even put more of an emphasis on it in a way that, you know, he's taken care of, and then maybe you'd be able to, let's just say, ignore your feelings. I mean, I don't know if I'm making any sense.
You are, which is what I do hear you. So the idea, the plan of attack is, instead of just focusing on my fears and where I'm at, is to actually sit down and be, and to focus on empathy with him, because that's something I can control. So no, I hear you.
Yeah.
And so I've definitely have been trying to do that, and yeah, we'll work on it this week. I think that's the big thing is to work on it as much as we possibly can. So short of me calling up every single family member and saying, you don't, you know, whatever is going to happen with them.
Yeah. Well, concentrate on you too.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing, you know, like, and I've told you this before too. You guys are a family already.
Mm-hmm.
You too. And just keep things in your family for right now.
Yep.
And just be about that. And I think you'll be fine. I mean, Lupron's almost done. Baseline's almost done. The really scary embryo transfer is almost done. One more week and then you get to go to Vegas.
That's true. That's true.
And yeah, Vegas.
I'm jealous, like legit jealous.
Yeah, as am I. Even though I was just there, I would so go again. Yeah. I mean, God, Vegas. But yeah, I mean, just keep one step in front of the other and you will get through this.
Yep, that's true. So that's what we're doing. So anyways, go ahead.
Do you want to share the other fear?
What other
with
fear?
The class?
What other fears that prompt me?
What you were telling me a little earlier?
Oh, that one. So embryo transfers, and we'll, you know, I mean, this is true anytime you go through IVF. Especially with frozen. One of the things that you will if for anybody who goes through a frozen cycle, one of the things they will sit down and do is they will have you sign a consent form that says, I recognize the fact that there is maybe a 70% chance that these embryos will survive the thaw. And Shelly and I actually met through being on the similar forum. So there was a woman on our forum who posted this week about going through an FET, and she ended up having to thaw 4 of her embryos, even though they were transferring 2. Mm-hmm. And it's because 2 of them didn't make the thaw. Mm-hmm. And the panic, you could tell from this woman is, both Shelly and I have known her now for, been almost 2.5 years. And so it's heartbreaking.
Something like that.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking just to see that, because I knew exactly where she was at with what she was feeling. Yeah. But then that sparked panic on me, because it's like, I've got 2 embryos left. And that, to be that woman who goes in to get that phone call where, oh, and never mind about coming in for the day because there's nothing left. So I've been trying to keep that fear at bay at this point in time, just basically because it's so far off. It's not until the beginning of January that's really going to happen. But now
and the percentages are low, and you've got high quality, high grade.
It's true. But the thing is, and so this is, again, me.
Which is important.
Yeah, this is me spinning, though. Me spinning says, yeah, but you've been lucky so far. I've been lucky so far. So far, everything we thawed has survived the thaw. So, of course, there's that panic of, we've been so lucky. What if this is our time when we're not so lucky?
No, because you've had enough bad luck. Like I was, this is the fact, okay? Like Shelly said on the comments when I announced that my 2B's clear, it's been a good week for the bitter and fertiles, and yep. I think it's time for a good luck streak, and so there's no reason why that streak won't continue, and you know, everything's gonna be fine.
Yeah,
it will.
Yeah, Christy, I think you can't worry about that. You have so many other real things that you have to deal with. You know, if that happens, you'll deal with it, and you know, when it comes along. But I don't think that's going to happen at all. And I just think, don't add another what if worry.
I think that what if is a really big because you based on what on evidence, not someone else. Because you think about your history, that hasn't applied so far.
Yep. Good point, Beth. That's exactly it. So far, your thaws have been great.
Yeah.
And your thaw was great even when you had crap, even when you thawed the crappy grade ones.
Exactly.
I know. So you're right. I'm just not going there. Not at this point. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. So okay. So let's talk a little bit about donor egg.
Yeah.
Before we jump into the real reason that Beth's here, which is to talk about Kate. But let's first talk about donor egg.
Well, I think there's a few things I would like to know. Just because I think the reality is that in this world we hear about women that go through donor egg, and ooh, it's, you know, people kind of go through the process, and that, you know, maybe there's a legal component and maybe there's finding people. So I'm wondering if you can just kind of walk us through the process that you've been going through in order to get this off the ground, because it's a mountain in and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. At this time last year, we knew nothing about egg donation, and we actually even just spent a long time thinking individually and as a couple as to whether that was a route we were interested in going. If that makes sense, because you're giving up. I'm kind of giving up, okay, the baby with the donor egg is part of both of us, because obviously I'll carry the baby and it's my husband's sperm. So, but equally, it's for both of you, you're having to make a decision that one of you isn't going to be putting in any DNA.
Yeah.
So that's a hell of a lot of thinking as to whether you want to go down that route at all.
Yeah.
Because it is a kind of, well, it is a really big thing to get your head around.
Yeah.
So we sort of did a lot of thinking on our own and together, and reading various books and things, and came to the conclusion that we were actually still, partly because we were both so integral to making this baby, that we were interested in it, and that our desire to have a baby was greater than sort of any issues that we had with that, how the baby is sort of made.
Mm-hmm.
Then we kind of have sort of looking then, it's sort of then thinking, well, okay, how the hell do you do this? Mm-hmm. The UK has a position where the child can find out when they turn 18. Mm-hmm. Who the donor was.
Okay.
Which for me raised that really big ticking time bomb. Mm-hmm. And raised also a lot of pressure on the child at that date to go and kind of, well, obviously they can do it afterwards, but if you know what I mean, there's an option suddenly on a certain date.
Yeah.
I think it actually puts a lot of pressure on the child. Mm-hmm. And also then on me, kind of waiting to see how the child reacts to that on a certain day. So obviously, we want to be open and give as much information as we can.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of does put a lot of pressure also on me that I feel I could get rejected.
Yeah.
So I wasn't very keen on the UK position. And also the other thing in the UK, because the monies that the donor receives are generally quite small. Most of the donors who are not altruist donors, they're doing it because they're kind of doing an IVF extra round. Mm-hmm. To make the IVF cheaper. So I was also then worried about sort of quality and quantity of eggs that come in my direction.
Mm-hmm.
But I discussed this all with my clinic, and they were like, well, you don't have to go down that route of using UK, which then leaves you can literally go anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Which was then, oh my God, there's anywhere in the world you can go. That's an awful lot of clinics.
Mm-hmm.
To consider, and the regimes and who knows what and when and the legal position and everything. So again, I went back to the manager at my clinic, who I've known now for sort of best part of 5 years, and who I love her very dearly, and sat down with her and said, well, who do you link with? And there, she links with a clinic in Spain, which is not the first clinic. They've changed clinics in the past couple of years. And so I kind of then did some research into the Spanish system, but I'd also looked into what goes on in Ireland and Italy and Russia. So we're going to Spain, or we have already been to Spain anyway to see the clinic, but we're going to Spain.
Okay.
For our donor egg. There's all sorts of reasons why. Partly because actually someone that I know and respect has recommended them.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have a ready supply of donors. No queuing and no waiting lists, which there is in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of testing on the donor. Mm-hmm. Sort of 5 rounds of tests that you have to pass before you can get accepted into the scheme, and they're generally much younger and fertile than UK donors. They also match everything to me.
Oh.
Down to blood type.
Wow.
So I gotta interrupt
yeah. and ask really quickly. So Spain is a Catholic country that yeah. has a policy about using all embryos. Do you have the ability to transport those embryos out of Spain back to the UK? Or do they have to stay in Spain?
I think they stay in Spain, but I keep them. Mm-hmm. So I get one donor.
Mm-hmm.
I get all her eggs. I can ask for them. I can donate them to if and when we need to, for a variety of reasons. I can give them to another couple, or we can put them sort of down the more medical route.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to ask, since that you technically will not have that genetic connection. That's, mm-hmm. by the way, that's not, we now know that's not true. You will, by carrying this baby, you will have a contribution. We now know that there are fetal cells that float in the mother's bloodstream. So there will be that contribution. You two will be bonded. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, it's a matter of what the law sees. Do you have to adopt this child?
No.
Okay.
I don't even need to in the UK tell them that I've had egg donation.
No. Okay.
So it's, my name will be on the birth certificate. I don't have to tell the GP or anything. My GP doesn't actually know that I'm going down this route. My clinic in the UK or Spain will not be writing to the general practitioner and telling them.
Mm-hmm.
They match down blood types. There'll be no way that they can even spot from that. And they are then, they also do the test for those classic sort of genetically inherited conditions. They test mm-hmm. down to those as well. So if you've got those, you're excluded from being an egg donor.
Okay.
So that was my husband's, his big concern was understanding the health side of the donor
mm-hmm.
And not having signed up to some sort of genetic received disease.
Yeah.
And you're screened out. So because they do fly around, anything that comes up, you're screened out. And so we're kind of having, there is a bit of a leap of faith and trust in the people who do the picking.
Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, I think that's quite nice because I'm letting medical practitioner professionals do that for me rather than necessarily having to do that myself.
Yeah, I had... One of my close friends he's gay, and he and his partner did donor egg with a surrogate in India, and I know he went through hell picking a donor. It was just torturous. So I can imagine that it's a huge weight off your shoulders just leaving it to medical science rather than, you know, trying to take all of these guesses about the person. But what about, like, do you get family medical history? Like, not just genetic stuff, but, like, say, diabetes, heart disease, that kind of stuff. Do you hear about that?
Yeah, and that's one of the rounds of testing that they do. Mm-hmm. So we get a certain list, and I don't have it in front of me, but we basically get a list that they've been cleared for those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, there is no family history. So that's what we know. So we will be able to tell the child these sorts of things.
Good.
And they will honestly be able to tell their GP mm-hmm. that they're in their family, as far as we've known, that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
That's awesome. I just got to say, that is awesome. And I do know that there are egg donor programs that are popping up in the States that are similarly run, but this is why I know people talk about wanting to do things on their own and piecemeal things versus going through a facility that does it. This is why going through the facility is so nice.
Yeah.
Because they consider so much.
Yeah. So I really do feel like, you know, what's important is you get to carry the baby and it's going to be your child no matter what. That's mm-hmm. that's for sure. But can you talk, if you don't mind, if this isn't too intimate, a little bit about, you know, your own, I'm sure there was a mourning process.
Oh, yeah.
That came along with making this decision. Do you mind kind of talking us through a little bit about what how you dealt with it with your husband and you know?
Yeah, it's one of those ones that until we did our third round of IVF that we were still technically unexplained, and then our AMH has sort of fallen, I wasn't responding to the drugs, and that's when they changed the diagnosis. We basically basically have taken a year to deal with this. I went away and got a really busy project at work. Worked on the Olympics for fun. So we basically just took some time. So we did a load of thinking on our own. We got one of these sort of self-help counselling type books to kind of explain to us what the whole process was. And I read it and then made my husband read it as well. And it took a long time. I was like, let's go away for a month. Let's not talk about anything for a month. Come back together. Let's see, you know, literally just be us. There's still a percentage of me who thinks that I could still get pregnant naturally. Yeah. I ovulate every month. Come on. You kind of think something at some point should happen. Yeah. I actually also we still laugh at all those years that you use birth control. Yeah. And all that money was spent on that.
Oh, yeah. I hear you. I hear you all the whole way.
So we've now got our humour back about it, possibly because we're now forward looking and we know what the future, or the short term future, is holding for us. We're still doing what my mindset is. We are doing what we need to do to get our child.
Yeah.
So when you kind of put it in that way in your head, it starts making sense. Mm-hmm. At the beginning we wouldn't have done this, but at the moment, for us, it's fine.
I think the important thing here, and this is, I think, you know, Christy, you and I have talked about this on several occasions, is to know that you've done everything you can through the other paths, I think is huge in terms of the process. Really saying, okay, we've tried X, Y, and Z, and trying X, Y, and Z obviously didn't work. So these are our options, I think, is a very, you know, it's a very healthy way of looking at it. It's as, you know, the second that, you know, you've tried all the other avenues, it makes sense that, you know, you got through it in a relatively easy fashion.
Yep. And I'll also add in, you said that in the early years, this didn't make sense and now it does. And I completely think that's natural. I think the reality is anybody who tells you that they automatically decided to go alternative routes prior to trying naturally is leaving something out. because that there is that natural draw to, you know, to be pregnant, to conceive, to carry your own children, to have that biological connection. That's very, very natural. It's only when you have gone through so much pain and trauma that you start reassessing and that viewpoint starts changing. I think anybody who tells you that they just automatically jumped there, they're leaving out critical information. So I think where you're at now, it's completely natural to be there. And I'll second what Mo has said. There is no reason that people need to know what you're doing unless you choose to tell them.
Yeah.
I mean, Beth, you know, I've been in touch with you on Twitter for a really long time, and I know the hell that you've been through. You say it in a very, you know, very sweet and charming way now, but I know you've not been down an easy road. And this, I think, when you told me that you were doing this, because I admit I'm not on Twitter enough to really get, but when you told me that you were doing this, I was so happy for you. And I feel like this is going to be your happy ending. And I'm really, really glad that you not only made the decision that's best for you, but also, you know, said, you know, made it in the right order and doing it from all, it seems like you've got it covered on every level. And I just think it's wonderful. And it's time for your happy ending. And I think you're going to get it from this. And I'm really happy for you that you're going down this route in such a wonderful way. Truly.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal to go through this, especially after going through hell.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm really excited for you, Beth. I really am. I think this is going to be wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. It is hard, so hard, having been through this for so long to go to Venice Week. But equally, it's really positive because I'm doing what I can to get my child. So that actually, you don't have weight on your shoulders when you decided that you're going down this route, because you're not going to, for me, I'm not going to be left with the what ifs.
Yeah, let's move on. I know we were going to talk about Grey's Anatomy this week, but because Beth is on, and also because there was some big news this week, it's time to get bitter about the royals.
So
apparently, and Christy, you had mentioned this to me earlier this week, and I think this is really true. Apparently, when we out people as possible infertiles on this show, they magically get pregnant. So, good stuff. So, Kate's pregnant.
Literally, I'm in my office on, what was this, Monday night they announced it. And I'm walking out of my office at the end of the day, and literally all the TV screens are flashing up Kate Middleton pregnant. And I'm just like, you know, the oomph. You shouldn't get that feeling in when you're at work, for goodness sakes. It's not as though I'm just, you know, looking through, you know, the gossip columns or anything. I was at work. So it's absolute headline news. And you're just like, oh, so jealous of this woman who is beautiful. And she married a prince, and she's got the most amazing wardrobe, and literally her lifestyle is she goes to the hairdressers, and she goes to charity events and gets given flowers, and that's about it as far as I can see. So I kind of went through that natural. I was kind of not hoping anyone to have any fertility issues, but she's so thin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you couldn't help but think when she kind of lost the weight a couple of years back that, eek, if she really wants babies, is that going to work? I was made to put on half a stone, 7 pounds. So, you know, you kind of think, well, at least something. There'll at least be some slight fairness in this world. but then, and also, they had said, the rumours had got out from them that they weren't going to try until about now, until they'd basically done the Jubilee and the Olympics and everything.
But so I think they just said that, like, just to buy themselves some time from the scrutiny.
To be honest, I think if I was in their position, yeah, I probably would have said it too.
Yeah.
Because shown by, I didn't know at that point, so like the full story, but it was literally headline news throughout the UK, and then kind of obviously went international.
Here too, yeah.
The next day, outside her hospital, there were 70 photographers.
Jeez.
So, out literally, this massive press pen outside the hospital were just camped there. So, oh my God, I just felt so sorry for her. And then even more so when you kind of found out that she was actually only about 8 weeks pregnant.
Right.
And they basically were forced to make the announcement because they knew that it would get leaked.
Right. When she went to the hospital.
Yep. When she went to the hospital.
Yeah.
She's got the, I can't remember the technical word, but the sort of the acute morning sickness.
Yes.
Right.
Thing. So, and literally the next day, the newspaper's like 20 pages in a newspaper about everything, about the pregnancy, about her haircut, about, you know, about this type of sickness, about the heir to the throne-ness and everything. So, you know, when I just felt really, really sorry for her. And then, and I actually told even my husband, I told him in a jealousy rage when I didn't quite know what was going on. You know, when you're just kind of having to tell your other half these sorts of essential pieces of gossip that he needs to know for his wider social integration with the world.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, which they really don't care about, but it's very important. So I'd sort of told him through gritted teeth, And then I told him later on, the next day, the actual true story, that it was only 2 months pregnant. And he was like, poor, you know, even sort of him as a man was just like, that's so unfair on that couple.
Yeah.
And you literally had people like my friends on Facebook and everything who I didn't even know were royalists. They're going, congratulations, Kate and Wills. I'm like, oh, goodness sakes, I can just about cope with actual pregnancy announcements of people I know. Do you really need to put be, you know, these sorts of announcements for people that we don't actually know? But then obviously I think really I just kind of came down to feeling really quite sorry for them that they had to announce it at this stage.
Right. Well, especially since they're not in the clear. I mean, this is the first trimester. So, I mean, yes, there are people out there like America. We have our wonderful version of royalty, such as the Kardashians, where they feel no qualms about announcing.
Don't give them.
Yeah. Well, but
don't give
but,
them that
well,
title.
Well,
please.
Oh, fine. That's fair. I know. Jess would probably kill me at the moment. But the reality is that for people that are idiots, announcing a pregnancy that early, they don't think anything about it because they haven't experienced anything that's been wrong. But the reality is that there is still the chance during this time something could go wrong. And now it's leaked. And if something does, can you imagine? I mean, I've had to untell early on. Yeah. I can't imagine having to untell on a global scale.
Yeah. And they hadn't even told their family. They were due to tell their family on Christmas Day and I guess announce either on Christmas Day or later.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you feel really sorry for her. And then I don't know if you guys have picked up, but the press intrusion has got even worse.
Oh, yes.
So,
Didn't the nurse die? The nurse died, didn't she?
Yeah. So it's awful. So an Australian radio station got hold of the hospital phone number, called at 5:30 in the morning. So got a nurse receptionist. She was a nurse, but she picked up the phone at what after the end of a night shift.
Mm-hmm.
Got taken in by the prank call. They've obviously been playing this story and she has just was obviously devastated by it.
Yeah.
As I think completely I could see I would be, you know what I mean? If you were in that position.
Absolutely.
And obviously now she has taken lit. Oh, it's so awful. And again, you kind of just feel so sorry for these people who one didn't want to make that announcement, but now because of that announcement, the guilt that they must feel.
Yes.
I know. It's really.
So it's just, it really must for them take what should have been a really joyous time and made it even worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, surely they always knew that it was never going to be a normal pregnancy announcement, a normal joyous time. They would always be having to deal with craziness, you know.
Yeah, I think, well, literally for the past 2 weeks since she cut her hair and she put a fringe in it, they've all just been going, why she got a fringe? And it literally got crazy because I think probably they had all been told to back off until about now. And then they were like, well, we know they're going to be trying about now. Mm-hmm. So I think they always knew that, but equally they would have liked to have done it in their own time, in their own way,
mm-hmm.
and obviously without any of this side of things.
Well, because everything else up until now has been a fairy tale for them. Their engagement announcement was such, their wedding was such, and even this. And the reality is how the royals are that is their lifestyle. Everything is controlled to the extent that they can do it. And there is a lot of pomp and circumstance and ceremony, but they control that pomp and circumstance and ceremony. This, they have no control over. I mean, the only control they had was that they knew that they had a choice of, do we let them know, let the press know, or do the press find out on their own? And that was it. So this is completely off protocol for this family.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that they probably are, because obviously the Duke of Edinburgh has been on hospital over the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. The poor hospital staff and everything, I just feel so sorry for this nurse and her family.
Oh, yeah.
But Yeah, it is that they probably knew they would be hounded, and they had managed so well up until now. And you do really feel sorry for them, because whilst they get sort of an amazing, they get amazing sort of return, or you know what I mean, as to they get to do amazing things that the rest of us don't get to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then the price to pay is this, is that she couldn't go through to the end of the first trimester without having to announce it and properly announce it, sort of thing. So
mm-hmm.
But the pest gang has been insatiable, but potentially now, because of what went wrong with this radio prank thing, then potentially they might actually back off now and give her some privacy. So
yeah,
I doubt it.
I doubt it too. But you can hope.
Yeah, I think it probably has reminded them, because there's just been a big thing in the UK anyway about press invasion of privacy and things, and this has probably just added to that. So, and they do try and tolerate things, and actually it's not like they're giving interviews left, right and centre. They actually don't talk very much. They go and do charity work,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of what their lives are. It's kind of all focused around charity work or saying thank you to people who've done amazing things. That's kind of what mm-hmm. the Royal Family do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so anyway, so she's pregnant, so and then there was all this whole story because of this morning sickness thing, is it or isn't it twins? And then
yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about. I was wondering, do you think it's possible that they could have gotten, you know, assisted help in conceiving without anyone knowing?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. No, that's
yeah. I think they could have. Well, no, I don't know if they. I think there was the potential that actually their consultants, obviously there was. Their consultants, I think, are so discreet that they could have. But, yeah, whether it's, say, being pointed or something.
But, I mean, but based on what you were saying, that, like, they had to announce her pregnancy early because she couldn't have gone into the hospital without, you know, people finding out. I mean, if they did IVF or even IUI, that's going into the hospital too. So
well, but it's different. I think the thing is that there's ways of doing those treatments where you can have substantial more control. And the reality is that, I mean, we go at least here in the States, I don't go to a hospital when I go and get these treatments done. I go to a clinic, and and I think it could be possible to do a lot of this stuff in-house. I mean, not the retrieval, obviously, but other things could be done in-house. So,
but that's what I thought about her treatment of this acute morning sickness. I was thinking they couldn't have given her an IV or monitored her from her house. I mean, it seems crazy.
Yeah, it does seem crazy. And I don't know. I really don't know. I do.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I'd have thought the only thing is that they didn't have the time to think about those options, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So there couldn't have been planning around it. It was probably what they considered an emergency situation.
Yeah. But I would have said, I have absolutely no knowledge, you know what I mean, but they probably could have done, say, Clomid or something like that with the doctor, say, going to her. Because actually she normally lives up in literally North Wales in the middle of nowhere, right out of the way. So not in central London, where basically the press have been told to keep away, do not follow her around. So there's potential she could have done stuff at where they normally live, because he's in the RAF.
Mm.
You know, and got some support up there. You know, there is potential. We will never know. I don't, because.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been some sort of drugs or something, like, you know. But who knows? If it is twins, though, there's massive debates about. Literally, it depends which baby comes out first, to kind of inherit the throne.
Oh, can you imagine that one? Because we were born 2 seconds earlier. You get
especially if it's crowd. C-section. Can you imagine?
Yeah, it depends which one's on top or which one literally. So So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I felt, honestly, you know, as bad as I feel for her when I read the line about it might be twins, I don't know, that just felt like a punch in the stomach. I was like, I don't know why. Because I know, yeah. You know, I mean, I almost had a twin pregnancy and I was relieved when it wasn't a twin pregnancy because they're so much riskier and all, you know what I mean? But it was like, if she gets all this and gets two babies, I don't know. That's, that hurts. That stings. I don't know why.
No, it does. It goes back to my whole jealous, blah, it's not fair thing. And the way I concluded it was literally, the only way I can keep saying about some of these things is there aren't a finite number of babies. So for her getting pregnant and with twins won't stop me getting pregnant. That's the only thing I can hold on to.
That's true.
I know that's true.
But yeah, but if it is twins, oh my God. So
I would think she'd have trouble carrying twins just from how tiny she is.
Yeah. Well, time will tell, right?
Yeah.
I guess they might deign to tell us at some point in the new year.
Well, you know, something will come out. If she's truly 4 months pregnant and she looks like she's at term,
right?
Then it will be time to, you know, to confess. So we'll find out at that point in time. But yeah, well, I think the thing that was probably the most impressive thing to me was the fact that this news was littered all over. Like, you work for the government, so it was coming up on your TVs at work. That's the thing that was probably the most impressive and striking thing to me, was that that this is, and it makes sense because these people, even though they're figureheads and they don't actually rule the country, they're still government officials, so to speak. But it's just, it's amazing to think that all of a sudden what your leading headline at work that you need to know about is, oh, and the princess is pregnant. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I was glad. I literally saw it as I was going out of the office at the end of the day. Thank goodness I hadn't seen it whilst I was still at work, because most of my work colleagues don't know what I'm going through. So I was literally stewing on the way home because I didn't know the full story. But yeah, it was everywhere. I mean, literally everywhere.
Oh my God. I can only begin to imagine.
Okay, well, so I'll wrap it up. So thank you so much for joining us, Beth. It was really, it was a pleasure having you.
Thank you
for sharing the story. And everything. Yeah, you guys know the drill. Email us, bitterandfertiles@gmail.com. Go to our website, bitterandfertiles.wordpress.com. Follow us on Twitter @bitterandfertile without the S. And still time to get in those Grey's Anatomy rants, everybody, because we will be talking about it. Oh yes, we will.
Yep. And Beth, I just want to say good luck with this cycle. We are rooting for you, and we hope for nothing but great things.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
Really crossing our fingers, because you, like I said, you're going to get your happy ending. I know it. So
thank you so much.
Okay, everybody. Well, thank you for joining us, and we will see you all next week.
Bye, okay, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye.